and over the sea faster than the fastest horse. There will never be a night so dark that its golden bristles will not give light and let you see what you are doing. It will never tire and will never fail you. It is called Gullinbursti, the golden bristled one. Frey looked impressed. Still, thought Loki, the magical ship that folded up like a cloth was every bit as impressive as an unstoppable boar that shone in the dark. Loki's head was quite safe. And the last gift Brock had to present was the one that Loki knew he had already managed to sabotage. From beneath the cloth, Brock produced a hammer and placed it in front of Thor. Thor looked at it and sniffed. "The handle is rather short," he said. Brock nodded. "Yes," he said, "that's my fault. I was working the bellows. But before you dismiss it, let me tell you about what makes this hammer unique. It's called Mjolnir, the lightning maker. First of all, it's unbreakable. Doesn't matter how hard you hit something with it, the hammer will always be undamaged." Thor looked interested. He had already broken a great many weapons over the years, normally by hitting things with them. "If you throw the hammer, it will never miss what you throw it at." Thor looked even more interested. He had lost a number of otherwise excellent weapons by throwing them at things that irritated him and missing. And he had watched too many weapons he had thrown disappear into the distance, never to be seen again. "No matter how hard or how far you throw it, it will always return to your hand." Thor was now actually smiling, and the thunder god did not often smile. "You can change the size of the hammer. It will grow, and it will also shrink down so small that if you wish, you can hide it inside your shirt." Thor clapped his hands together in delight, and thunder echoed across Asgard. "And yet, as you have observed," concluded Brock sadly, "the handle of the hammer is indeed too short. This is my fault. I failed to keep the bellows blowing while my brother, Atri, was forging it." "The shortness of the handle is a minor cosmetic problem," said Thor. "This hammer will protect us from the frost giants. This is the finest gift I have ever seen." "It will protect Asgard. It will protect all of us," said Odin with approval. "If I were a giant, I would be very afraid of Thor if he had that hammer," said Frey.
"Yes, it's an excellent hammer. But Thor, what about the hair? Sif's beautiful new golden hair?"
asked Loki slightly desperately.
"What? Oh yes, my wife has very nice hair," said Thor. "Now, show me how to make the hammer grow and shrink, Brock."
"Thor's hammer is better even than my wonderful spear and my excellent arm ring," said Odin, nodding.
"The hammer is greater and more impressive than my ship and my boar," admitted Frey. "It will keep the gods of Asgard safe."
The gods clapped Brock on the back and told him that he and Atri had made the finest gift that they had ever been given.
"Good to know," said Brock. He turned to Loki.
"So," said Brock, "I get to cut off your head, Loive's son, and take it back with me. Atri will be so pleased. We can turn it into something useful."
"I will ransom my head," said Loki. "I have treasures I can give you."
"Atri and I already have all the treasure we need," said Brock.
"We make treasures."
"No, Loki, I want your head."
Loki thought for a moment, then said,
"Then you can have it, if you can catch me."
And Loki leapt high into the air and ran off far above their heads. In moments he was gone.
Brock looked at Thor. "Can you catch him?"
Thor shrugged.
"I really shouldn't," he said. "But then,
I would very much like to try out the hammer.
In moments, Thor returned, holding Loki tightly. Loki was glaring with impotent fury. The dwarf, Brock, took out his knife.
Come here, Loki, he said. I'm going to cut off your head.
Of course, said Loki. You can, of course, cut off my head. But, and I appeal to mighty Odin here, if you cut off any of my neck, you are violating the terms of our agreement, which promised you my head and my head only.
Odin inclined his head. Loki is right, he said. You have no right to cut his neck. Brock was irritated.
But I can't cut off his head without cutting his neck, he said.
Loki looked pleased with himself.
You see, he said, if people thought through the exactness of their words, they would not dare to take on Loki. The wisest, the cleverest, the trickiest, the most intelligent, the best-looking.
Brock whispered a suggestion to Odin.
That would be fair, agreed Odin.
Brock produced a strip of leather and a knife. He wrapped the leather around Loki's mouth. Brock tried to pierce the leather with the tip of the knife blade.
It's not working, said Brock. My knife isn't cutting you.
I might have wisely arranged for protection from knife blades, said Loki modestly. Just in case the whole you-can't-cut-my-neck ploy did not work. I'm afraid no knife blade can cut me.
Brock grunted and produced an awl, a pointed spike used in leather work, and he jabbed it through the leather, punching holes through Loki's lips. Then he took a strong thread, and he sewed Loki's lips together with it. Brock walked away, leaving Loki with his mouth sewn up tight, unable to complain. For Loki, the pain of being unable to talk hurt even more than the pain of having his lips stitched into the leather. So now you know. That is how the gods got their greatest treasures. It was Loki's fault. Even Thor's hammer was Loki's fault. That was the thing about Loki. You resented him even when you were at your most grateful, and you were grateful to him even when you hated him the most.
The Master Builder. Thor had gone to the east to fight trolls. Asgard was more peaceful without him, but it was also unprotected. This was in the early days, shortly after the treaty between the Aesir and the Vanir, when the gods were still making a home for themselves, and Asgard was undefended.
We cannot always rely on Thor, said Odin. We need protection. Giants will come. Trolls will come.
What do you propose? Asked Heimdall, the watchman of the gods.
A wall, said Odin. High enough to keep out frost giants, thick enough that not even the strongest troll could batter its way through.
Building such a wall, said Loki, so high and so thick, would take us many years.
Odin nodded his agreement.
But still, he said, we need a wall.
The next day, a newcomer arrived in Asgard. He was a big man, dressed as a smith. And behind him trudged a horse, a stallion, huge and grey with a broad back.
They say you need a wall built, said the stranger.
Go on, said Odin.
I can build you a wall, said the stranger. Build it so high that the tallest giant could not climb it, so thick that the strongest troll could not batter through it. I can build it so well by placing stone upon stone that not an ant could find space enough to crawl through it. I will build you a wall that will last for 1,000,000 years.
Such a wall would take a very long time to build, said Loki.
Not at all, said the stranger. I can build it in 3 seasons. Tomorrow is the first day of winter. It would only take me a winter, a summer, and another winter. To build.
And if you could do this, said Odin, what would you ask in return?
I need little enough payment for what I'm offering, said the man.
Only three things. First, I would like the beautiful goddess Freya's hand in marriage.
That is not a little thing, said Odin, and it would not surprise me if Freya had her own opinions about the matter.
What are the other two things?
The stranger grinned a cocky grin. If I build your wall, he said, I want the hand of Freya, and I also want the sun that shines in the sky by day, and I want the moon that gives us light at night. These three things are what the gods will give me if I build your wall.
The gods looked at Freya. She said nothing, but her lips were pressed together and her face was white with anger. Around her neck was the necklace of the Brisings, which shone like the northern lights as it brushed her skin, and her hair was banded in gold, which was almost as bright as the hair itself.
Go and wait outside, said Odin to the stranger. The man walked away, not before asking where he could find food and water for his stallion, which was called Svathulfari, which means one who makes an unlucky journey. Odin rubbed his forehead. Then he turned and looked at all the gods.
Well? Asked Odin.
The gods began to talk.
Quiet! Shouted Odin. One at a time!
Each of the gods and the goddesses had an opinion, and every one of them was of the same opinion that Freya, the sun, and the moon were all too important and too valuable to be given to a stranger, even if he could build them the wall they needed in three seasons. Freya had an additional opinion. She felt that the man should be beaten for his impertinence, then thrown out of Asgard and sent on his way.
So, said Odin the Allfather, we are decided. We say no.
There was a dry cough from a corner of the hall. It was the kind of cough intended to attract attention, and the gods turned to see who had coughed. They found themselves looking at Loki, who stared back at them, and who smiled, and held up a finger as if he had something important to divulge.
It is worth my pointing out, he said, that you are ignoring something huge.
I do not think we have overlooked a single thing, troublemaker of the gods, said Freya tartly.
You are all overlooking, he said, that what this stranger is proposing to do is, to make no bones about it, quite impossible. There is no one alive who could build a wall so high and so thick as the one he described and have it finished in 18 months. Not a giant or a god could do this, let alone a mortal man. I would stake my skin on it.
At this, the gods all nodded and grunted, and looked impressed. All of them except for Freya, and she looked angry.
You are fools, she said, especially you, Loki, because you think yourself clever.
What he says he can do, said Loki, is an impossible task. So I suggest this. We agree to his demands and to his price, but we set him stiff conditions. He may have no help building his wall, and instead of 3 seasons to build his wall, he has but one. If on the first day of summer any of the wall is unfinished, and it will be, then we pay him nothing at all.
Why would he agree to that? Asked Heimdall.
And what advantage would that give us over not having a wall at all? Asked Frey, Freya's brother.
Loki tried to suppress his impatience. Were all the gods fools?
He began to explain, as if he were explaining to a small child.
The smith will begin to build his wall. He will not finish it. He will work for 6 months, unpaid, on a fool's errand. At the end of 6 months, we will drive him away. We might even beat him for his presumption. And then we can use whatever he has done so far
as the foundations of the wall that we will complete in the years to come. There is no risk to us of losing Freya, let alone the sun or moon.
Why would he say yes to building it in a season? Asked Tyr, god of war.
He may not say yes, said Loki, but he seems arrogant and sure of himself and not the kind to refuse a challenge.
All the gods grunted and clapped Loki on the back and told him that he was a very crafty fellow, and it was a good thing that he was crafty and on their side, and now they would get their foundations built for nothing, and they congratulated each other on their intelligence and their bargaining ability.
Freya said nothing. She fingered her necklace of light, the gift of the Breesings. This was the same necklace that had been stolen from her by Loki in the form of a seal when she was bathing, and that Heimdall had fought in seal form with Loki to return to her. She did not trust Loki. She did not care for the way this conversation had gone. The gods called the builder into their hall. He looked around at the gods. They all seemed in good humor, grinning and nudging each other and smiling. Freya, however, did not smile.
Well, asked the builder.
You asked for 3 seasons, said Loki. We will give you 1 season and 1 season only. Tomorrow is the first day of winter. If you are not finished on the first day of summer, you leave here unpaid. But if you have finished building the wall as high and as thick and as impregnable as we have agreed, then you will be given everything you have asked for. The moon, the sun, and the beautiful Freya. You may have no help in building your wall from anyone. You must build this wall alone.
The stranger said nothing for some moments. He stared away into the distance and seemed to be weighing Loki's words and conditions. Then he looked at the gods, and he shrugged.
You have said I may have no outside help. I would like my horse, Svathulfari, to help me haul the stones here, the stones I will use to build the wall. I do not believe this to be an unreasonable request.
It is not unreasonable, agreed Odin.
And the other gods nodded and told each other that horses were good for hauling heavy stones.
They swore oaths then, the mightiest of oaths, the gods and the stranger, that neither side could betray the other. They swore on their weapons, and they swore on Draupnir, Odin's golden arm ring, and they swore on Gungnir, Odin's spear, and an oath sworn on Gungnir was unbreakable. The next morning, as the sun rose, the gods stood to watch the man work. He spat on his hands, and he began to dig the trench into which the first stones would go.
He digs deep, said Heimdall. He digs fast, said Frey, Freya's brother.
Well, yes, obviously he is a mighty digger of ditches and trenches, said Loki grudgingly, but imagine how many stones he will have to haul here from the mountains. It is one thing to dig a trench, it is another to haul stones many miles unaided and then to place them, one stone upon the next, so tightly fitted that not an ant could crawl between them. Higher than the tallest giant, to make a wall.
Freya looked at Loki with disgust, but she said nothing. When the sun set, the builder mounted his horse and set off for the mountains to gather his first rocks. The horse dragged an empty stone boat behind it, a low sled that it pulled across the soft earth. The gods watched them leave. The moon was high and pale in the early winter sky.
He will be back in a week, said Loki. I am curious to see how many rocks that horse can haul. It looks strong.
The gods went to their feast hall then, and there was much merriment and laughter. But Freya did not laugh. It snowed before dawn, a light dusting of snowflakes, a presentiment of the deep snows that would come further into the winter. Heimdall, who saw everything approaching Asgard, and who missed nothing, woke the gods in the darkness. They gathered by the trench the stranger had dug the previous day. In the gathering dawn they watched the builder, walking beside his horse,
coming toward them. The horse was steadily dragging a score of blocks of granite, so heavy that the sled made deep ruts in the black earth. When the man saw the gods, he waved and called good morning cheerfully. He pointed to the rising sun, and he winked at the gods. Then he unhitched his horse from the rocks and let it graze while he began to manhandle the first of the granite blocks into the trench he had already dug to receive it. The horse is indeed strong, said Balder, most beautiful of all the Aesir. No normal horse should be able to drag rocks that heavy. It is stronger than we imagined, said Kvasir the wise. Ah, said Loki, the horse will soon tire. This was its first day on the job. It will not be able to haul that many stones every night. And winter is coming. The snows will be deep and thick. The blizzards will be blinding and the way to the mountain will be difficult. There is nothing to worry about. This is all going according to plan. I hate you so much, said Freya, who stood unsmiling beside Loki. She walked back to Asgard in the dawn and did not stay to watch the stranger build the foundations of his wall. Each night, the builder and the horse and the empty stone boat left for the mountain. Each morning they returned, with the horse dragging another 20 blocks of granite, every block larger than the tallest man. Each day the wall grew, and by evening it was bigger and more imposing than it had been before. Odin called the gods to him. The wall is growing apace, he said, and we swore an unbreakable oath, a ring oath, and a weapon oath, that if he finishes building his wall in time, we will give him the sun and the moon and the hand in marriage of Freya the Beautiful. Kvasir the Wise said, no man can do what this master builder is doing. I suspect that he must be something other than a man. A giant, said Odin. Perhaps. If only Thor were here, sighed Balder. Thor is hammering trolls away in the east, said Odin, and even if he were to return, our oaths are mighty and binding. Loki tried to reassure them. We are like old women, getting ourselves all worried about nothing. The builder cannot finish the wall before the first day of summer, even if he is the most powerful giant in the land. It is impossible. I wish Thor were here, said Heimdall. He would know what to do. The snows fell, but the deep snow did not stop the wall builder, and it did not slow Svafofari, his horse. The grey stallion pulled his sled, piled high with rocks, through snowdrifts and through blizzards, up steep hills and down again through icy gorges. The days began to get longer. Dawn came earlier each morning. The snows began to melt, and the wet mud that was exposed was thick and heavy, the kind of mud that clings to your boots and drags you down. The horse will never be able to haul those rocks through the mud, said Loki. They will sink, and he will lose his footing. But Svafofari was sure-footed and implacable, even in the thickest, wettest mud, and he hauled the rocks to Asgard. Although the stone boat was so heavy it cut deep gashes into the sides of the hills. Now the builder was hauling the rocks up hundreds of feet and manhandling each rock into place. The mud dried, and the spring flowers came out. Yellow coltsfoot and white wood anemones in profusion, and the wall being built around Asgard was a glorious, imposing thing. When it was finished, it would be impregnable. No giant, no troll, no dwarf, no mortal would be able to breach that wall. And the stranger continued to build it with relentless good humor. He did not seem to care if it rained or it snowed, and neither did his horse. Each morning they would bring the rocks from the mountains. Each day the builder would lay the granite blocks upon the previous layer. Now it was the last day of winter, and the wall was all but completed. The gods sat on their thrones in Asgard, and they spoke. "The sun," said Balder. "We have given away the sun. We placed the moon in the sky in order to mark off the days and the weeks of the year," said Bregi, god of poetry, moodily. "Now there will be no moon." "And Freya? What will we do without Freya?" asked Tyr. "If this builder is actually a giant," said Freya, with ice in her voice, "then I will marry him and follow him back to Jotunheim, and it will be interesting to see whom I hate more, him for taking me away or all of you for giving me to him." "Now, don't be like that," began Loki, but Freya interrupted him and said, "If this giant does take me, and the sun and the moon, then I ask only one thing from the gods of Asgard." "Name it," said Odin Allfather, who had said nothing until now. "I would like to see whoever caused this calamity killed before I go," said Freya. "I think it only fair. If I am to go into the land of the frost giants, if the moon and the sun are to be plucked from the sky and the world plunged into eternal darkness, then the life of the one who got us to this point should be forfeit." "Ah," said Loki, "the apportioning of blame is so difficult. Who remembers exactly who suggested what? As I recall, all the gods share equally in this unfortunate mistake. We all suggested it. We all agreed to it." "You suggested it," said Freya. "You talked these idiots into it, and I will see you dead before I leave Asgard." "We all," began Loki, but he saw the expressions on the faces of all the gods in that hall, and he fell silent. "Loki, son of Loive," said Odin, "this is the result of your poor counsel, and it was as bad as all your other advice," said Balder. Loki shot him a resentful glance. "We need the builder to lose his wager," said Odin, "without violating the oath. He must fail." "I don't know what you expect me to do about it," said Loki. "I do not expect anything from you," said Odin. "But if this builder succeeds in finishing his wall by the end of tomorrow, then your death will be painful and long, and a bad and shameful death at that." Loki looked from one god to the next, and in each of their faces he saw his death, saw anger and resentment. He did not see mercy or forgiveness. It would be a bad death indeed. But what were the alternatives? What could he do? He did not dare to attack the builder. On the other hand, Loki nodded. "Leave it to me." He walked from the hall, and none of the gods tried to stop him. The builder finished placing his load of stones on the wall. "Tomorrow, on the first day of summer, as the sun was setting, he would finish his wall, and then he would leave Asgard with his wages. Only 20 more granite blocks to go." He clambered down the rough wooden scaffolding and whistled for his horse. Svafalfari was grazing, as he normally was, in the long grass at the edge of the forest, almost half a mile from the wall, but he always came when his master whistled. The builder grabbed the ropes that attached to the empty stone boat and prepared to hitch it to his great grey horse. The sun was low in the sky, but it would not set for several hours, and the disk of the moon was pale, but it was there, high in the heavens, as well. Soon both of them would be his, the greater light and the lesser, and Freya the lady, who was more beautiful than either the sun or the moon. But the builder would not count his winnings before they were in his hands. He had worked so hard and so long for all the winter. He whistled for the horse again.
Odd.
He had never needed to whistle twice. He could see Swathofari now, shaking his head and almost prancing in the wildflowers of the spring meadow. The horse would take a step forward and then a step back, as if he could scent something enticing in the warm air of the spring evening, but could not tell what the scent was.
Swathofari! Called the builder,
and the stallion pricked his ears up and moved into a swift canter across the meadow, heading for the builder. The builder watched his horse head toward him, and he felt satisfied. The hoofbeats pounded across the meadow, doubling and redoubling, with the echoes that bounced from the high grey granite wall. So for one moment the builder imagined that a whole herd of horses was coming toward him.
No, thought the builder, just one horse.
He shook his head and realized his mistake. Not one horse. Not one set of hoofbeats. Two. The other horse was a chestnut mare. The builder knew she was a mare immediately. He didn't have to look between her legs. Every line of her, every inch of her, everything about the chestnut was female. Swathofari wheeled as he ran across the meadow. Then he slowed and reared and neighed loudly. The chestnut mare ignored him. She stopped running, as if he were not there, and she put her head down and seemed to be cropping the grass as Swathofari approached her. But when he was within a dozen yards, she began to run from him, a canter that became a gallop, and the grey stallion ran behind her, trying to catch her, always a length or two behind, nipping at her rump and tail with his teeth, yet always missing. They ran across the meadow together in the creamy golden light of the end of the day, the grey horse and the brown sweat glistening on their flanks. It was almost a dance. The builder clapped his hands loudly and whistled and called Swathofari's name, but the stallion ignored him. The builder ran out, intending to catch the horse and bring him back to his senses, but the chestnut mare seemed almost to know what he intended, for she slowed and rubbed her ears and mane against the side of the stallion's head and then ran as if wolves were after her toward the edge of the forest. Swathofari ran after her, and in moments they both vanished into the shadows of the wood. The builder cursed and spat and waited for his horse to reappear. The shadows lengthened, and Swathofari did not return. The builder returned to his stone boat. He looked into the woods, then he spat on his hands, took hold of the ropes, and began to haul the stone boat across the meadow of grasses and spring flowers toward the mountain quarry. He did not return at dawn. The sun was already high in the sky by the time the builder returned to Asgard, hauling the stone boat behind him. He had 10 stone blocks on the stone boat, all he could manage, and he was hauling and heaving the stone boat and cursing the stones, but with each heave he got closer to the wall. Beautiful Freya stood at the gateway, watching him. "You have only 10 stone blocks with you," she told him. "You will need twice that many bricks to finish our wall." The builder said nothing. He carried on hauling his blocks toward the unfinished gateway, his face a mask. There were no smiles, no winks, not any longer. "Thor is returning from the east," Freya told him. "He will be with us soon." The gods of Asgard came out to watch the builder as he hauled the rocks toward the wall. They joined Freya, stood about her protectively. They watched, silently at first, and then they began to smile and to chuckle and to call out questions. "Hey," shouted Baldur, "you only get the sun if you finish that wall. Do you think you will be taking the sun home with you?"
"And the moon," said Breki.
"Such a pity you do not have your horse with you. He could have carried all the rocks you need."
And the gods laughed.
The builder let go of the stone boat then. He faced the gods.
"You cheated," he said,
and his face was scarlet with exertion and with anger.
"We have not cheated," said Odin, "no more than you have cheated. Do you think we would have let you build our wall if we had known you were a giant?"
The builder picked up a rock, one-handed, and smashed it against another, breaking the granite block into two. He turned to the gods, half of the rock in each hand, and now he was 20, 30, 50 feet tall. His face twisted. He no longer looked like the stranger who had arrived in Asgard a season before, placid and even-tempered. Now his face looked like the granite face of a cliff, twisted and sculpted by anger and hatred.
"I am a mountain giant," he said, "and you gods are nothing but cheats and vile oath-breakers. If I still had my horse, I would be finishing your wall now. I would be taking the lovely Freya and the sun and the moon for my wages, and I would be leaving you here in the darkness and the cold without even beauty to cheer you."
No oath was broken, said Odin, but no oath can protect you from us now. The mountain giant roared with anger and ran toward the gods, a huge lump of granite in each hand as a club. The gods stood aside, and only now the giant saw who was standing behind them. A huge god, red-bearded and muscular, wearing iron gauntlets and holding an iron hammer, which he swung once. He let go of the hammer when it was pointing at the giant. There was a flash of lightning from the clear skies, followed by the dull boom of thunder as the hammer left Thor's hand. The mountain giant saw the hammer getting rapidly bigger as it came hurtling toward him, and then he saw nothing else. Not ever again. The gods finished building the wall themselves, although it took them many more weeks to cut and haul the last 10 blocks from the quarries high in the mountains and drag them all the way back to Asgard and place them in position at the top of the gateway. They were not as well-shaped or as well-fitted as the blocks the master builder had shaped and placed himself. There were those of the gods who felt that they should have let the giant get even closer to finishing the wall before Thor killed him. Thor said that he appreciated the gods having some fun ready for him when he got home from the east. Strangely, for it was most unlike him, Loki was not around to be praised for his part in luring away the horse Svafilfari. Nobody knew where he was, although there were those who spoke of a magnificent chestnut mare seen on the meadows beneath Asgard. Loki stayed away for the best part of a year, and when he showed up again, he was accompanied by a grey foal. It was a beautiful foal, although it had 8 legs instead of the usual 4, and it followed Loki wherever he went, and nuzzled him, and treated Loki as if he were its mother. Which, of course, was the case. The foal grew into a horse called Sleipnir, a huge grey stallion, the fastest and the strongest horse that ever there had been or ever there would be, a horse that could outrun the wind. Loki presented Sleipnir to Odin as a gift, the best horse among gods and men. Many people would admire Odin's horse, but only a brave man would ever mention its parentage in Loki's presence, and nobody ever dared to allude to it twice. Loki would go out of his way to make your life unpleasant if he heard you talking about how he lured Svafilfari away from its master and how he rescued the gods from his own bad idea. Loki nursed his resentments. And that is the story of how the gods got their wall. The Children of Loki. Loki was handsome, and he knew it. People wanted to like him, they wanted to believe him, but he was undependable and self-centered at best, mischievous or evil at worst. He married a woman named Sigyn, who had been happy and beautiful when Loki courted and married her, but now always looked like she was expecting bad news. She bore him a son, Narfi, and shortly afterward another son, Vali. Sometimes Loki would vanish for long periods and not return, and then Sigyn would look like she was expecting the very worst news of all. But always Loki would come back to her, looking shifty and guilty, and also as if he were very proud of himself indeed. 3 times he went away. 3 times he, eventually, returned. The 3rd time Loki returned to Asgard, Odin called Loki to him. "I have dreamed a dream," said the wise old one-eyed god. "You have children."
"I have a son, Narfi, a good boy, although I must confess that he does not always listen to his father, and another son, Vali, obedient and restrained."
"Not them. You have 3 other children, Loki. You have been sneaking off to spend your days and your nights in the land of the frost giants, with Angabotha, the giantess, and she has borne you 3 children. I have seen them in the eye of my mind as I sleep, and my visions tell me that they will be the greatest foes of the gods in the time that is to come." Loki said nothing. He tried to look ashamed, and succeeded simply in looking pleased with himself. Odin called the gods to him, with Tyr and Thor at their head, and he told them that they would be journeying far into Jotunheim, to Giantland, to bring Loki's children to Asgard. The gods travelled into the land of the giants, battling many dangers, until they reached Angabotha's keep. She was not expecting them, and she had left her children playing together in her great hall. The gods were shocked when they saw what Loki and Angabotha's children were, but that did not deter them. They seized the children, and they bound them, and they carried the oldest between them, tied to the stripped trunk of a pine tree, and they muzzled the 2nd child with a muzzle made from knotted willow, and they put a rope around its neck as a leash, while the 3rd child walked beside them, gloomy and disturbing. Those on the right of the 3rd child saw a beautiful young girl, while those on the left tried not to look at her, for they saw a dead girl, her skin and flesh rotted black, walking in their midst.
"Have you noticed something?" Thor asked Tyr, on the 3rd day of their journey back through the land of the frost giants. They had camped for the night in a small clearing, and Tyr was scratching the furry neck of Loki's 2nd child with his huge right hand.
"What?"
"They are not following us, the giants. Not even the creature's mother has come after us. It's as if they want us to take Loki's children out of Jotunheim."
"That is foolish talk," said Tyr. But as he said it, even though the fire was warm, he shivered. 2 more days of hard traveling, and they were in Odin's hall.
"These are the children of Loki," said Tyr, shortly.
The 1st of Loki's children was tied to a pine tree, and was now longer than the pine tree it was tied to. It was called Jormungandr, and it was a serpent.
"It has grown many feet in the days we have carried it back," said Tyr. Thor said, "Careful, it can spit burning black venom. It spat its poison at me, but it missed. That's why we tied its head to the tree like that."
"It is a child," said Odin. "It is still growing. We will send it where it can harm nobody." Odin took the serpent to the shore of the sea that lies beyond all lands, the sea that circles Midgard, and there on the shore he freed Jormungandr and watched it slither and slip beneath the waves and swim away in loops and curls. Odin watched it with his one eye until it was lost on the horizon, and he wondered if he had done the right thing. He did not know. He had done as his dreams had told him, but dreams know more than they reveal, even to the wisest of the gods. the serpent would grow beneath the grey waters of the world ocean, grow until it encircled the earth. Folk would call Jormungandr the Midgard Serpent. Odin returned to the great hall, and he ordered Loki's daughter to step forward. He stared at the girl. On the right side of her face, her cheek was pink and white. Her eye was the green of Loki's eyes. Her lips were full and carmine. On the left side of her face, the skin was blotched and striated, swollen in the bruises of death, her sightless eye rotted and pale, her lipless mouth wizened and stretched over skull-brown teeth.
"What do they call you, girl?" asked the Allfather.
"They call me Hel," she said. "If it pleases you, Allfather."
"You're a polite child," said Odin. "I'll give you that."
Hel said nothing, only looked at him with her single green eye sharp as an ice chip, and her pallid eye dull and spoiled and dead, and he saw no fear in her.
"Are you alive?" he asked the girl. "Or are you a corpse?"
"I am only myself, Hel, daughter of Angerbotha and of Loki," she said, "and I like the dead best of all. They are simple things, and they talk to me with respect. The living look at me with revulsion."
Odin contemplated the girl, and he remembered his dreams.
Then Odin said, "This child will be the ruler of the deepest of the dark places, and ruler of the dead of all the nine worlds. She will be the queen of those poor souls who die in unworthy ways, of disease or of old age, of accidents or in childbirth. Warriors who die in battle will always come to us here in Valhalla, but the dead who die in other ways will be her folk to attend her in her darkness." For the first time since she had been taken from her mother, the girl Hel smiled with half a mouth. Odin took Hel down to the lightless world, and he showed her the immense hall in which she would receive her subjects, and watched as she named her possessions.
"I will call my bowl Hunger," said Hel. She picked up a knife.
"This is called Famine. And my bed is called Sick Bed." That was two of Loki's children with Angerbotha dealt with then. One in the ocean, one to the darkness beneath the earth. But what to do with the third? When they had brought the third and smallest of Loki's children back from the land of giants, it had been puppy-sized, and Tyr had scratched its neck and its head and played with it, removing its willow muzzle first. It was a wolf cub, grey and black, with eyes the colour of dark amber. The wolf cub ate its meat raw, but it spoke, as a man would speak, in the language of men and the gods, and it was proud. The little beast was called Fenrir. It too was growing fast. One day it was the size of a wolf, the next the size of a cave bear, then the size of a great elk. The gods were intimidated by it, all except Tyr. He still played with it and romped with it, and he alone fed the wolf its meat each day. And each day the beast ate more than the day before, and each day it grew and it became fiercer and stronger. Odin watched the wolf child grow with foreboding. For in his dreams the wolf had been there, at the end of everything, and the last things Odin had seen in any of his dreams of the future were the topaz eyes and the sharp white teeth of Fenris Wolf. The gods had a council, and resolved at that council that they would bind Fenrir. They crafted heavy chains and shackles in the forges of the gods, and they carried the shackles to Fenrir.
"Here!" said the gods, as if suggesting a new game. "You have grown so fast, Fenrir. It is time to test your strength. We have here the heaviest chains and shackles. Do you think you can break them?"
"I think I can," said Fenris Wolf. "Bind me."
The gods wrapped the huge chains around Fenrir and shackled his paws. He waited motionless while they did this. The gods smiled at each other as they chained the enormous wolf.
"Now!"
shouted Thor. Fenrir strained and stretched the muscles of his legs, and the chains snapped like dry twigs. The great wolf howled to the moon, a howl of triumph and joy.
"I broke your chains," he said. "Do not forget this."
"We will not forget," said the gods. The next day Tyr went to take the wolf his meat.
"I broke the fetters," said Fenrir. "I broke them easily."
"You did," said Tyr.
"Do you think they will test me again? I grow, and I grow stronger with every day."
"They will test you again. I would wager my right hand on it," said Tyr. The wolf was still growing, and the gods were in the smithies, forging a new set of chains. Each link in the chains was too heavy for a normal man to lift. The metal of the chains was the strongest metal that the gods could find. Iron from the earth mixed with iron that had fallen from the sky. They called these chains Thromi. The gods hauled the chains to where Fenrir slept. The wolf opened his eyes.
"Again?" he said.
"If you can escape from these chains," said the gods, "then your renown and your strength will be known to all the worlds. Glory will be yours. If chains like this cannot hold you, then your strength will be greater than that of any of the gods or the giants." Fenrir nodded at this and looked at the chains called Dromi, bigger than any chains had ever been, stronger than the strongest of bonds.
"There is no glory without danger," said the wolf after some moments. "I believe I can break these bindings. Chain me up."
They chained him. The great wolf stretched and strained, but the chains held. The gods looked at each other, and there was the beginning of triumph in their eyes, but now the huge wolf began to twist and to writhe, to kick out his legs and strain in every muscle and every sinew. His eyes flashed and his teeth flashed and his jaws foamed. He growled as he writhed. He struggled with all his might. The gods moved back involuntarily, and it was good that they did so, for the chains fractured and then broke with such violence that the pieces were thrown far into the air, and for years to come the gods would find lumps of shattered shackles embedded in the sides of huge trees or the side of a mountain.
"Yes!"
shouted Fenrir, and howled in his victory like a wolf and like a man. The gods, who had watched the struggle, did not seem, the wolf observed, to delight in his victory. Not even Tyr. Fenrir, Loki's child, brooded on this and on other matters, and Fenrir's wolf grew huger and hungrier with each day that passed. Odin brooded, and he pondered, and he thought. All the wisdom of Mimir's well was his. And the wisdom he had gained from hanging from the world tree, a sacrifice to himself. At last he called the light elf Skirnir, Frey's messenger, to his side, and he described the chain called Gleipnir. Skirnir rode his horse across the rainbow bridge to Svartalfheim, with instructions to the dwarfs for how to create a chain unlike anything ever made before. The dwarfs listened to Skirnir describe the commission, and they shivered, and they named their price. Skirnir agreed, as he had been instructed to do by Odin, although the dwarfs' price was high. The dwarfs gathered the ingredients they would need to make Gleipnir. These were the six things the dwarfs gathered. For firstly, the footsteps of a cat. For secondly, the beard of a woman. For thirdly, the roots of a mountain. for fourthly the sinews of a bear, for fifthly the breath of a fish, for sixth and lastly the spittle of a bird. Each of these things was used to make Gleipnir.
You say you have not seen these things?
Of course you have not. The dwarfs used them in their crafting. When the dwarfs had finished their crafting, they gave Skirnir a wooden box. Inside the box was something that looked like a long silken ribbon, smooth and soft to the touch. It was almost transparent and weighed next to nothing. Skirnir rode back to Asgard with his box at his side. He arrived late in the evening after the sun had set. He showed the gods what he had brought back from the workshop of the dwarfs, and they were amazed to see it. The gods went together to the shores of the Black Lake, and they called Fenrir by name. He came at a run, as a dog will come when it is called, and the gods marveled to see how big he was and how powerful.
"What's happening?"
asked the wolf.
"We have obtained the strongest bond of all," they told him. "Not even you will be able to break it."
The wolf puffed himself up.
"I can burst any chains," he told them proudly.
Odin opened his hand to display Gleipnir. It shimmered in the moonlight.
"That," said the wolf, "that is nothing."
The gods pulled on it to show him how strong it was. "We cannot break it," they told him. The wolf squinted at the silken band that they held between them, glimmering like a snail's trail or the moonlight on the waves, and he turned away, uninterested.
"No," he said. "Bring me real chains, real fetters, heavy ones, huge ones, and let me show my strength."
"This is Gleipnir," said Odin. "It is stronger than any chains or fetters. Are you scared, Fenrir?"
"Scared? Not at all. But what happens if I break a thin ribbon like that? Do you think I will get renown and fame, that people will gather together and say, 'Do you know how strong and powerful Fenris Wolf is? He is so powerful, he broke a silken ribbon.' There will be no glory for me in breaking Gleipnir."
"You are scared," said Odin. The great beast sniffed the air.
"I scent treachery and trickery," said the wolf, his amber eyes flashing in the moonlight. "And although I think your Gleipnir may only be a ribbon, I will not consent to be tied up by it."
"You? You who broke the strongest, biggest chains there ever were? You are scared by this band?" said Thor.
"I am scared of nothing," growled the wolf. "I think it is rather that you little creatures are scared of me."
Odin scratched his bearded chin. "You are not stupid, Fenrir. There is no treachery here. But I understand your reluctance. It would take a brave warrior to consent to be tied up with bonds he could not break."
"I assure you, as the father of the gods, that if you cannot break a band like this, a veritable silken ribbon, as you say, then we gods will have no reason to be afraid of you, and we will set you free and let you go your own way."
A long growl from the wolf.
You lie, Allfather. You lie in the way that some folk breathe. If you were to tie me up in bonds I could not escape from, then I do not believe you would free me. I think you would leave me here. I think you plan to abandon me and to betray me. I do not consent to have that ribbon placed on me."
"Fine words and brave words," said Odin. "Words to cover your fear at being proved a coward, Fenris Wolf. You were afraid to be tied with a silken ribbon. No need for more explanations."
The wolf's tongue lolled from his mouth, and he laughed then
showing sharp teeth each the size of a man's arm. Rather than question my courage, I challenge you to prove there is no treachery planned. You can tie me up if one of you will place his hand in my